took place at the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniyah in Tehran. In this program, we discuss the leader's remarks and points of view expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with people from all walks of life on the first day of the Iranian New Year on Wednesday, 20th of March 2024. The leader described the coincidence of the spring season with the spiritual spring of Ramadan as a great blessing from the Almighty to his faithful and righteous servants. The leader added, "The spring of nature and the spring of spirituality coming together this year signifies that Almighty God is offering both types of His grace to His servants for their use. Of course, the difference between the two is immense. Today, both the spring breeze of nature and the spring breeze of spirituality can be used by all the pious, righteous servants of God. This is because spring breeze refreshes the atmosphere, brings a sense of freshness to our bodies, and is a source of growth, flourishing and flowering. The same concept applies to our spirit in the breeze of spirituality. The spiritual breeze of the spring of Ramadan breathes light and vitality into our souls. But what is the spiritual breeze of Ramadan? It is fasting, of course. Fasting is one of Ramadan's breezes. It is also the night of Qadr, the night of ordainment or the night of power. It is the supplications that are recited during the nights and during the days of Ramadan. These are all spiritual breezes that breathe into the soul of a resolute individual, contributing to their growth, rejuvenation and flourishing. They dispel spiritual lethargy and indifference. They transform a person into a righteous servant. During the month of Ramadan, you strive towards righteousness and become a righteous servant of God. The Almighty has made promises to His righteous servants in this world. In Ayah 105 of Surah Anbiya in the Holy Quran, the Almighty says, "Indeed, my righteous servants shall inherit the earth." As for the hereafter, in Ayah 69 of Surah Nisa in the Holy Quran, the Almighty says, "They are with those whom Allah has blessed, including the prophets and the truthful, the martyrs and the righteous, and excellent companions are they." There, the righteous servants will be elevated to the ranks of the prophets, the righteous, and the martyrs. I hope, God willing, that our dear nation, the entire Islamic Ummah, and all people whose hearts are devoted to God will use spirituality for their personal growth and progress. At the beginning of each year, Ayatollah Khamenei selects a slogan for the year to garner attention and direct the efforts of the country's officials towards achieving that goal. This year's slogan or motto is "Surge in Production Through People's Participation." The leader added, "Regarding this year's slogan, 'Surge in Production Through People's Participation,' it aims to motivate individuals to focus their efforts and thoughts on a key component of the country's fundamental strategy. The year's slogan is usually a part of the country's fundamental strategy. Not only does it focus the efforts and attention of our officials on a specific area, but it also serves to raise public awareness and demand for this matter. That is why we propose a motto every year, and this tradition has been upheld for many years. In recent years, the motto has emphasized and focused on the economy. Last year, the slogan was inflation control and growth in production. Official certified reports tell us that good things have been done in this field. However, it is still rather far from the desired result, and additional work is required. Therefore, I am saying that last year's motto is one of our objectives for this year as well. Commenting further, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "The economy is one of the country's fundamental issues. Economic problems are one of the weaknesses for various reasons. When the country's economy is in a favorable situation, it can have a positive impact on all general aspects of the nation. It can positively affect people's religion and lives. The enemies have been trying to bring our country's economy to its knees for years, and they have put serious effort into this. The hostility of the United States and its allies has been evident over time, with their ultimate goal being the economic collapse of Iran. They want to bring the country to its knees economically. Of course, with the determination and efforts of our young people, and the efforts of the general public and officials of the country, the enemy has not succeeded in its objectives. And by the will and power of God, they will continue to fail in future years as well." The leader added, "Nonetheless, the enemy is relentlessly continuing their economic pursuits against the Islamic Republic. They're active in this area, so we too must be active. We must work tirelessly around the clock." Turning to productivity, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "Our country's productivity is low, and the resources we consume, such as water, electricity, time, and our human capital, do not yield a proportional amount of benefit as much as they should. However, these issues have potential solutions and can be corrected based on experience. God willing, action needs to be taken in this area as well, and we need to raise our productivity." Turning to two important issues of hope and faith, the leader said, "Our national interest today and our promising future hinge on hope and faith. I want to emphasize these two areas, hope and faith. If the light of hope is extinguished in our hearts, no action will be taken. We possess immense potential for advancement, a wealth of talented young people, a driven and dedicated nation. We have tremendous natural resources and an excellent geographical location. We are fully capable of achieving significant strides and advancement. We have made significant progress since the beginning of the Islamic Revolution. Now our enemies conceal this, and some people may not know how to articulate this properly. But we have the potential to achieve even greater advancements. However, these advancements are only possible if you and I remain optimistic about the future. We need to maintain our hope and understand that we can work and make progress and move forward." The leader added, "Praise God, we don't have a shortage of factors for being hopeful about the country's future. There are many things in this country that give people hope, including our scientific advancements in industry, in healthcare, in space science, in politics, and the advances we have made in foreign policy and what is considered as security in this country. Several million people rallied through the country annually on 11th of February, and praise God they do this with complete security. The elections are held in complete safety and security. Few places in the world have this kind of stability, security, and public participation. These factors give us hope. Why should we not be hopeful when we have so many promising factors? Giving an example, the leader said, our military officials produce and launch a defense tool such as a missile, but in the enemy's propaganda, they claim this is a lie. This is why the launch of that missile is taking place in front of people's eyes. So this is what the enemy is doing. But why did some people do this inside the country? In my opinion, some people are negligent. We should not allow ourselves to be negligent, and we should not make this mistake. The leader added, I advise our dear young people to stay ahead of the enemy's plans. Our young people should stay ahead of the enemy's game. The enemy wants you to lose hope. Your efforts to create hope and to instill hope in the hearts of the youth should surpass the enemy's attempts to eliminate it. The enemy does not want certain voices to be heard, both at the national and international levels, but we must work in the opposite direction and ensure that these voices are heard. Today, there are various tools at our disposal, and that is one point. Another point regarding national interests is the issue of uniting the hearts of the people, uniting the determination and will of all the people. Unfortunately, we have problems in this area. We have setbacks. Social interactions and empathy are very important. We have become neglectful in this area. We are creating disturbances in our national unity with our own actions. We're all responsible for this neglect. We all have a duty to preserve national unity, people's unity, and the bond between the people and government officials, and strengthen this bond day by day. Turning to the issue of Palestine and the situation in the Gaza Strip, the leader said, resistance in the West Asia region is currently a fundamental issue that has captured the world's attention. The issue of Palestine can be looked at from several angles. Firstly, the events in Gaza have shed light on the nature of the oppression and darkness that is prevailing in the world. This Western world, the so-called civilized world that claims to be an advocate of human rights, among other things, has shown the nature of the darkness that has taken hold of their lives, their thoughts and actions. More than 30,000 Palestinians have been massacred, including babies, children, teenagers, young people, the elderly, women and men. Within a short period of time, over 30,000 people were murdered. Their homes and their country's infrastructure have been destroyed. And yet, the so-called civilized Western world just looks on. Not only does it fail to prevent the crimes of the Israeli regime, it also is supporting these crimes. In the very first days of the Zionist regime's brutal war on Gaza, the United States continuously made visits to the occupied territories, and so did the Europeans. They showed their support and assistance for the Israeli regime. They openly announced it, and it wasn't just an announcement. They sent weapons and resources as well to the Israeli regime. They provided all kinds of support for the Zionists. This is the darkness of today's world. This is the kind of world that we're facing today. It is only natural for those with a conscience, individuals who have an awakened conscience in the region, when they witness the oppression being carried out by the Zionists that has been going on for over 70 years now, they do not remain silent or passive. They think of resistance. This is the reason the Resistance Front was established. It was formed to confront this ongoing oppression being carried out by the Zionist criminals against innocent Palestinians. Turning to the United States and its actions with regards to the Israeli war in Gaza, the leader said, As for the United States, the U.S. put itself in the worst possible situation with regards to the issue of Gaza. The United States chose the worst stance in the region. What it did has made it despised throughout the entire world. Those who take part in pro-Palestinian protests on the streets of London, Paris and other European capitals, and in cities throughout the United States itself, are in fact expressing their hatred towards the United States. The US has become despised in the world. It was already despised in the region, and this hatred has increased. They have an incorrect understanding of the issues of this region. The decisions they made that are based on that incorrect understanding are also wrong. Wherever it is in the region, be it in Yemen, Iraq, Syria, or Lebanon, any measure that is taken by the fighting, brave resistance forces, the US attributes to Iran in their assessments. This miscalculation will definitely bring the United States to its knees. They don't understand the peoples of this region, and they insult regional nations and the courageous young people, who are wise, strong-minded, and determined. In further comments, the leader said, "Of course, we support the resistance. We support the resistance groups as much as possible. We applaud their endeavors. But they are the ones making their decisions and taking action. And in what they are doing, they are right. We believe that the Zionist regime is committing an immense oppression in this region. This is a very big oppression that is taking place. But this oppression must end. Whoever becomes involved in this great jihad, this human jihad, this Islamic jihad, we are on their side. We will help them, and by God's will and God's power, we will achieve our objectives." In concluding remarks, the leader wished God's greetings and mercy and blessings on all those present.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord.
These words, Quran.
Muhammad.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station, Choo Choo Kachu. It's Youth Station for you. I'm your humble co-host, Muzaffar Haider.
And I am Asma.
How are you doing, Sister Asma?
Well, it's fine. Well, we're having a lot to talk about.
Yeah?
Yes.
What have you been up to? It's Ramadan, so we're like...
Yes, of course, but then still life is an ongoing process, so we have to think about everything, especially in Ramadan.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it happens to you as well or not, but sometimes it happened to me to think about this very point that why are we as human beings do not get satisfied with anything, like in hardships, when everything, when the hustles and bustles are done and we're over it, and like you are past all of these difficulties, then there comes this peaceful condition. And then in those peaceful condition, again, you feel like you need some suspense in your life, some more of adventure, some more of excitement. You're not satisfied with anything.
You're asking the wrong person. I go through that every day. I wonder for myself, what am I doing at home or at work or whatever other mundane activity I'm partaking in? And I'm thinking, why am I not off on an adventure on a ship or fighting with pirates or, you know, battlefield somewhere? Yes. You know, where's the adventure in my life?
So, but do you think about the aftermath of that adventure? Like, when you are put in that adventurous situation, would you be satisfied with it? Or no, you would feel like, okay, I want to be back at home. I want my peaceful.
That's a good question. Yeah, I'd probably
zone.
Be like, yeah, I probably want to be back at home.
Yeah.
It's that old saying, isn't it? The grass is always greener on the other side.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't matter where you are. You're always going to see something else as greater. And that's why satisfaction with Allah is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have that satisfaction with Allah, once you have that, you know, sense of tranquility and thankfulness for whatever situation you are in, that's when your life will actually progress. Until then, you're always going to be in this state of dissatisfaction.
Yeah, there is this paradoxical feeling in us as human beings. Like, just as I said, when it's war, we want the peace. When it's peace, we want the war.
Yeah.
Like, as I am just saying, it's so paradoxical and sometimes it's so annoying to think about it.
In movies and stories, they always show that they often show that the character is, the main character, the protagonist, who is probably, they're always depicted in a state of satisfaction, and then that satisfaction is snatched from them, and they have to join. Like, for example, it'll be a farmer or something, and he's really happy, he's got a wife and kids.
And then there's a quest,
they have
to go for that quest,
exactly.
And then life changes, and then again, we come to the moment of equilibrium, and then again, that cycle has to be broken.
Yep.
Every now and then.
It's the whole narrative theory behind it. Is I feel like when you study narrative theory, because we're both English literature students, right? It's really fascinating because people don't realize this. They think, it's not just stories. When we're studying narrative theory, we're actually studying the theory of life itself.
Exactly.
And there is a reality behind what we are reading in the novel and what is reflected in the outside world, what we're actually experiencing. So, for example, one of the things that we learn in narrative theory is the thing that you just pointed out, that there's always an equilibrium, then a disruption of that equilibrium, and then a new equilibrium is established.
Exactly.
And it's always like that. Now, even if you just zoom out and look at our existence, that is the case, because you're going to be born into this world, and then you're tested, right? The disruption of the equilibrium takes place, and then eventually, you know, in the hereafter, you're going to get a new equilibrium, a new existence,
exactly.
And that is going to reflect what you've done throughout this journey of life. So it's really profound in that sense, and I really love to think about it. And a lot of the ways that I understand life, the universe, and everything is that we're simply players. You know, as Shakespeare said, that the world's a stage and we are but the players. We really are just characters in this epic, epic story being written by the greatest of creators, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Exactly, yeah. That's why I love literature. It actually reflects us. Every single individual who's living in this world has been reflected in all those books, among those papers and words. So just as you mentioned, all the stories, they either start from the equilibrium that has to be disrupted, or they're going to start from disruption that are going to end in equilibrium. So as we have it in the Holy Book of Quran as well, innama al usra yusra, after all difficulties, there is this tranquility and there is this peaceful moment that you're going to achieve. So it's both hopeful, and at the same time, sometimes when you get to that peaceful condition of your life, maybe it will turn you into a different person, like you will get used to this silence and this peace, which is not always good. So we have to go for a break, and then after we come back, we'd pursue our discussion.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Yes, you're listening to Youth Station, and we're talking about why us as human beings do not get satisfied with anything. Like, whenever it is equilibrium, we're just searching for a disruption. Whenever it's disruption, we're searching for an equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of paradoxical in what we want.
Yeah.
And that's the nature of life, I suppose. Let's just bring an example from the ordinary life. Like, whenever you have too much of works to be done at your workplace or whenever you have a lot of courses to study for your exams, after that hard times are over, then you feel like you're missing all those fightings, all those wars and conflicts.
Yeah.
But then when you're back to those conflicts, you feel like, okay, how much I miss my comfort zone.
Yeah.
I would love to go back.
It's, for example, age as well, right? However, once you pass the age of 30, right,
mm-hmm.
you start to look back and you're like, I wish I was 25, or I wish I was 26, wish I was 27. But the reality is that, I don't know, I looked it up, and apparently people are always want to be a certain age, and that certain age, can you guess what it is? When they ask older people, which age would you like to be?
No, I'm personally, myself, I always miss my childhood.
Really? Well, they say it's 36. 36 is like that idea. I know, it's so strange,
why?
Isn't it? I don't know. Well, I guess we'll know once we get there, but inshallah. But yeah, so it's always about this discontent with where we are. And that's where a lot of this inner peace, you know, Islam is all about that peace, right? It's not just peace in the general sense, like, you know, is it, oh, it's a peaceful religion. No, it's not just talking about that. It's about acquiring this inner tranquility, this satisfaction with mm-hmm. the decree of Allah. It's absolute submission to the will of Allah.
And how is it achieved? Now, that's the question.
Yeah, that's the exact question. But it's about, you know, complete, it's not just submission as in my actions are submitted to Allah, but my heart is submitted as well. And that's why you have a personality like Imam Ridha alayhi salam, who's completely, his name means the satisfied. He's in acceptance of what's happening in his life. He understands fully and completely that this is the will of Allah.
Yeah, and contentment.
It's complete contentment.
The last key, I guess, in our lives, like, we're not content with anything that happens to us and with anything that we have. There's nothing that would make us feel like, okay, this is the absolute contentment that I must have in my life.
I mean, look at the story of Prophet Ayyub, right? Prophet Ayyub was a really thankful servant of Allah. Shaitan says to Allah, well, of course he's thankful, of course he's worshipping you, because he's got everything. He's got a wife, he's got kids, he's got crops, he's got a farm, he's got respect. Mm-hmm. Let me be in control of his life. And then we'll see if he really still stays a true servant. So Allah agrees. Shaitan takes control of Ayyub's life, alayhi salam. And what Shaitan does is he kills Ayyub's, he doesn't himself do it, but the point is that Ayyub loses his wife, he loses
everything,
his kids, he loses his crops,
him.
He loses his health. He becomes very, very sick. And even when he is absolutely sick, and this hadith is actually, you know, it's debated, but I still want to state it because it still, you know, hints at that complete ridaya, that complete satisfaction. He was so ill that he had worms on his body.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, he never prayed for health. He never prayed for, whatever befell him, he was thankful for it. He was like, Alhamdulillah, Allah, this is your test, and I fully accept it. But there came a point where his people actually came to him and said, we doubt your prophethood. How can you be the prophet if you're, you know,
you're suffering this much?
At this point, Ayyub, out of the mercy of Allah, he says, oh Allah, my people are actually going to go astray. Please restore my blessings to me. And at that point, all of his blessings are restored to him.
The miracles.
Yeah, he got his children back, his wife back, his crops back, his mm-hmm. health back, and everything else. Imagine if we could train ourselves to be really thankful for whatever situation we're actually in. Like right now, I'm sitting opposite you. I could be thinking, well, why can't I be having a coffee or sitting at home playing a video game with, I don't know,
your favorite,
some kind of food.
Your favorite thing to do.
Yeah. It's like Ramadan is such a perfect analogy for this entire thing, because the whole day you're thinking, what's your favorite food?
My favorite food, it depends on my mood.
I knew you were going to give some sort of answer like that. Anyway, my favorite food is spaghetti bolognese, right? And I could spend all day just waiting for spaghetti bolognese, but when you actually get to iftar time, you can have like two bites and you're done.
Yeah.
You know? And then you're thinking, oh, now I just feel stuffed and I want to go and lie down. You're never really satisfied. I think I'm most satisfied when I'm sleeping.
That's the nature of life, I guess.
The Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, he said something beautiful. He said, if you doubt that you are going to die, try to stay awake. As much as you try, you're eventually going to go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, if you doubt that you're going to be raised again on the Day of Judgment, try to stay asleep.
Nice.
No matter how much you try and stay asleep, eventually you're going to be woken up again, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the nature of our life. There are certain things which are completely inevitable. And we're not supposed to hasten those things either, like the Day of Judgment. We should recognize that, yeah, this is a reality that's going to take place.
Yeah.
And it will take place whenever Allah wants it to. We're not supposed to hasten that. It's not like the reappearance of Imam Mahdi, which we're supposed to, you know, actively try and hasten.
So, if I just want to wrap it all up and give the gist of whatever we've been talking about, as in today's episode, I would say that there is no moment of satisfaction, of absolute and perfect satisfaction in our lives as long as we are in this mundane world. Like, it's a world of tests and conflict and sometimes miserable situations, but still life has got its own beauties. Like, yes, it's true that whenever it's peaceful, we're searching for the conflict to flourish more of ourselves, to have more fruits from our lives. And whenever we are out of storms, we just miss those storms. Like, this is the gist of what we're talking about. And this is the nature of life, of course. So thank you, brother. And thank you, dear listeners. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And it comes out to be fruitful for you guys to think more about what's going on in our lives. So this was all for today's episode. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Rabbil alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, 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 Allah, Allah, Allah.
In the limelight.
The situation in Rafah is overwhelmingly catastrophic, as an estimated 1.5 million people remain crammed in a patch of land that was home to 250,000 before the war. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Mustafa and his family have been uprooted many times over the past 6 months. The first displacement occurred when the Zionist regime bombarded Arimal, a neighborhood of Gaza City. The family's home was destroyed as a result. The family went to stay with relatives in Jabalia refugee camp. The relatives' home was also attacked. The family then took shelter at a school run by the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. It too came under fire. The family were having one meal per day at most in the north. As the time went on, they could not find any food at all. Mustafa did not want to leave the northern part of Gaza, but starvation forced us to flee, he said. And so the family headed to Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. The house in which they found shelter that was attacked by Israel within a few weeks of their arrival. Now, the family are in Rafah, Gaza's southernmost city. They are staying in a relative's home. Mustafa is deeply worried by the Zionist regime's repeated threats to conduct a major ground offensive in Rafah. If such an offensive occurred, he doesn't know where the family could live. He said, I think we would have to go to our graves. We would have no other choice. Hamza similarly had to leave Gaza City. He and his family moved to Khan Yunis, southern Gaza, during the all-too-brief truce at the end of November. The family were staying in a tent near Nasser Medical Complex, where the Zionist regime ordered the evacuation of the area in January. The hospital is one of many to have been besieged by the Zionist regime. Following the evacuation order, the family walked to Rafah. They are among the vast numbers of people now living in tents, Hamza said. The situation is catastrophic in Rafah. There are vegetables in the markets, but their prices have hit the roof, so we can only eat canned food, which doesn't give us the nutrition we need. He added, we have already lost several kilos in weight. I wonder how much more we will lose when Israel undertakes a ground invasion and leaves us with little access to food and water. We could die from starvation. Soher is a mother of three. She has paid tens of thousands of dollars to a company arranging travel for people from Gaza. The money had been earned from her work in digital marketing. She said, I have spent most of my savings so that my children and I can survive. She's now waiting to see her family appear on a list of people permitted to leave Rafah and enter Egypt. It can take a month between handing over money and being granted the required authorization for travel. Soher does not know what she would do if the Zionist regime launches a major ground offensive in Rafah before her family is allowed to travel. A major offensive against Rafah would result in the same type of wholesale destruction that the Zionist regime has inflicted on other areas, Soher predicts. She said, we will die if we stay. There will be massacres and starvation everywhere. Meanwhile, Middle East I wrote, in Gaza, if you get sick, you either wait for God's mercy or wait for your death. There is little to nothing by way of treatment. If every Palestinian in Gaza spoke about their loss and suffering, the sea would run dry before these stories could end. We have lost our cities and towns with their memories, streets, schools, mosques, and churches, a Palestinian in Gaza said. Both Gaza's history and present are being wiped out. In the heart of every challenge lies the seed of hope, and amid every tragedy, the strength of resilience and willpower shines through. Despite the many wounds, Gaza's story remains full of tenderness, strength, and hope. Gaza has faced the harshest conditions, yet it has not surrendered or stopped dreaming of a better tomorrow. In each of its people lies the courage of a struggle and a desire to build a future that restores Gaza's charm and peace. Resilience and determination to live with dignity burns within Gaza residents. And with each passing day, hope is somehow maintained and the will to move forward grows despite all the hardships.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor, Israel. Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Today's crimes in Gaza have shown legitimacy of resistance front and that it must be strengthened. March 20th, 2024. The art and power of the month of Ramadan is that through the spiritual breeze of fasting, worship, invocations, and supplications, it draws a person who is not neglectful and is on the path of righteousness and servitude toward enthusiasm and effort. The events in Gaza and the massacre of more than 30,000 women, children, the elderly, and the young in front of the eyes of the so-called civilized world is a demonstration of the oppression and darkness ruling the Western world despite its claims of advocating human rights. These events have shown that the presence of the resistance front in this region is one of the most vital issues, and this front, which was born from awakened consciences in order to confront the 70 years of oppression and occupation imposed by the Zionist criminals, must continue to be strengthened day by day. The strength of the resistance caused their calculations to go wrong. It has shown that not only is the U.S. unable to dominate the region, they cannot even maintain a presence there. They have no option but to leave the region.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
It has become clear that the Zionist regime is suffering a crisis. Not only in terms of protecting itself, but also in terms of coming out of the crisis. Because by entering the war in Gaza, it has become stuck in a quagmire. Regardless of whether it comes out of Gaza or not, it will have failed. Wherever it is in the region, be it in Yemen, Iraq, Syria, or Lebanon, any measure that is taken by the fighting and brave resistance forces, the Americans will attribute it to Iran. This shows that the U.S. doesn't understand the people of the region and the brave, determined youth. This miscalculation will definitely bring the U.S. to its knees. In truth, it is the resistance groups themselves who make their decisions and take action, and they are in the right. We are on the side and the supporter of whoever becomes involved in this great human Islamic jihad of principles. And with the grace of God, we will achieve our objectives.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I wanna thank you for bringing me home.
In the limelight.
In the United States, prosecutors are saying Donald Trump stoked and encouraged the publicity he's now citing as a reason for delaying his hush money trial. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office told the judge it will be perverse to reward the defendant with an adjournment based on media attention that he's actively seeking. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. The American newspaper, the New York Daily News, has covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump's efforts to delay his upcoming trial in the Stormy Daniels hush money case by arguing he's been hurt by publicity is hypocritical and should be rejected, Manhattan prosecutors wrote in a new court filings on Wednesday, 3rd of April. Asking Manhattan Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchan to deny the former president's 8th motion to delay the trial slated for 15th of April based on media attention he's actively seeking, prosecutors said Donald Trump was trying to have his cake and eat it as well. He has repeatedly invited public attention to this criminal trial through campaign rallies, online social media posts, television interviews by himself and his counsel, and frequent press conferences, including in the very hallway of the courthouse, just steps away from the courtroom before and after court appearances, Assistant District Attorney Matthew Colangelo wrote. Defendant simply cannot have it both ways, complaining about the prejudicial effect of pretrial publicity whilst seeking to pollute the jury pool himself by making baseless and inflammatory accusations about his trial, specific witnesses, individual prosecutors, and the court itself. The presumptive Republican nominee has pleaded not guilty to 34 felonies in the case, alleging he covered up reimbursement to Michael Cohen to disguise that it was for a hush money scheme that included paying off the actress Stormy Daniels. In the 18th of March motion, Trump's lawyers posited that oversaturated media coverage had destroyed his chances of a fair trial, that it would be impossible to find an unbiased jury, and that anticipated witnesses for the district attorney, like Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen, had driven adverse media reports, among other arguments. President Trump has been unfairly and improperly demonized in this coverage, Trump lawyer Todd Blanche wrote, President Trump cannot get a fair trial in Manhattan County right now. Assistant District Attorney Colangelo countered that a survey by Trump's attorneys of 400 residents showing 88% of respondents had read about hush money payments surrounding the 2016 presidential election and 35% believed him guilty provided no background about how they obtained contact information or ensured samples were random, but did not prove Manhattanites couldn't be impartial. Donald Trump has doggedly fought to delay the case and failed in February to convince Judge Juan Merchan to push it back based on publicity. On Tuesday, 2nd of April, he renewed another argument that failed in August to force Judge Juan Merchan to recuse himself based on his daughter's consulting work on campaigns for Democrats. That came after Judge Merchan expanded a gag order to prohibit Donald Trump from attacking his and District Attorney Alvin Bragg's relatives when Trump targeted his daughter, Lauren Merchan, online, telling his followers she was a rabid Trump hater profiting from her dad's rulings. Assistant District Attorney Colangelo said that the insistence by Trump's lawyers to inject relatives into public filings was reckless and beyond the pale, given unprecedented security threats facing District Attorney Melvin Bragg, his family, and others as a result of Trump's dangerous rhetoric and persistent attacks. The District Attorney Alvin Bragg and Judge Juan Merchan have been subjected to death threats since Donald Trump was first indicted. The national broadcaster NBC News has also covered the same story. Prosecutors in New York on Wednesday, 3rd of April, urged a judge to reject Donald Trump's bid to delay his impending criminal trial because of pre-trial publicity, arguing the former president has constantly stoked and encouraged such publicity. Trump's own incessant rhetoric is generating significant publicity, and it would be perverse to reward the defendant with an adjournment based on media attention he's actively seeking, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's office said. The court filing was in response to a request by Donald Trump's lawyers to delay the trial for the foreseeable future because of prejudicial publicity around the case. The defendant here has done much more than simply give occasional statements. Instead, he has repeatedly invited public attention to his criminal trial through campaign rallies, online social media posts, television interviews by himself and by his counsel, and frequent press conferences, including in the very hallway of the courthouse, just steps away from the courtroom, before and after court appearances. An attorney for Donald Trump did not immediately respond to NBC News' request for comment. Trump's attorneys contended in a court filing last month their client cannot get a fair trial in New York County right now because of the large amount of negative press coverage as well as repeated public statements by two key witnesses in the case, former Trump attorney Michael Cohen and film actress Stormy Daniels. Michael Cohen paid Stormy Daniels $130,000 in the closing days of the 2016 presidential election for her silence about her claims. Donald Trump has denied Stormy Daniels' claims, but prosecutors maintain he directed Michael Cohen to make the payment and then repaid him in disbursements that were falsely classified as legal expenses. Donald Trump has pleaded not guilty. Trump's court filing said Michael Cohen has and will continue to spew vitriol into public sphere regarding President Trump, and Stormy Daniels had made remarks critical of the president while a new documentary about her on NBC Universal's streaming platform Peacock includes her prejudicial false commentary about this case and President Trump. The district attorney's office said it has no real means of enforcing restrictions on the speech of Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels, who are private citizens. In any event, there is no indication that their public statements have materially affected the overall level of publicity attached to this case, especially compared to the extensive national press coverage of the defendant's own provocative remarks, nor is there any reason to think that an adjournment would make a difference. The press is likely to seek comment from these individuals whenever a defendant's trial occurs, regardless of whether the trial begins on 15th of April or on a later date. Prosecutors also noted there will always be publicity swirling around this case. Because this trial is a criminal proceeding against the former president, the press attention will be substantial regardless of when, or for that matter, where this trial is held. The district attorney noted that the judge rejected a similar request by Donald Trump's lawyers back in February, and that there is no reason for him to change his position. They also told Judge Juan Merchan the effort is the eighth time that Donald Trump has moved to adjourn the trial, which is scheduled to begin jury selection in less than 2 weeks' time.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
With a military parade, Hezbollah marked International Quds Day in Lebanon, where hundreds of Lebanese and Palestinians raised their fists in a show of support for the resistance group and its leader. Hezbollah Secretary General underscored the significance of the Lebanese front and raised his voice in response to the Israeli threat, saying the resistance in Lebanon is fully prepared for any war.
The resistance in Lebanon does not fear war. It has managed battle in the last 6 months with a clear strategy and a vision which is complementary to the ongoing battle in the region. The resistance has managed the battle in a manner that would lead to victory while protecting Lebanon. However, it is fully prepared morally, mentally, and militarily for any war which the enemy would regret having launched against Lebanon.
Hezbollah's leader downplayed the ability of the Israeli regime to launch a full-scale war on Lebanon with the fact that it is extremely exhausted and has achieved none of its declared objectives except for the killing of innocent women and children. And despite the sacrifices, he said, the alliance of resistance is on the path to a historic and major victory.
Based on logic and political, military, diplomatic, regional, international and economic information, we are able to see very clearly what the leader of the Iranian revolution had said during the first days of the war, that Israel will be defeated and that Gaza will be victorious, and Netanyahu will have no choice but to stop the war, which will be a historic and major victory for the resistance in the region.
A significant part of the speech touched upon the Iranian role in supporting the resistance factions and the oppressed people of the region. It also confirmed that the Iranian response to the Israeli attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus will certainly come, and that everyone needs to be ready for what may lie ahead after this retaliation.
We are very close to a victory since the blood that has been shed in Gaza and Lebanon and from all our brothers will be fruitful. This is why this year is exceptional and it has a very positive impact on our hearts and has given us hope that a big victory is possible.
It's not just the duty of Muslims to take part in Al Quds Day, but also as human beings all over the world, since it proves their humanity.
We are here not to support just Gaza. We are supporting all Palestine, the resistance in all region. We'll elaborate Palestine and Al-Quds, and we will win, inshallah.
Hezbollah's leader also noted that Al-Aqsa flood has put Israel's existence in danger and exposed its vulnerabilities. And those who should be ashamed are the ones who have normalized ties with Israel.
Al-Quds Day this year is distinct on all levels.